Good evening and welcome everybody. And actually before I came, one of our Anakarikas, she said, oh, I wish you have a successful talk. And the other Anakarika said, oh no, not to be too successful after you become so popular that you have to give more talks. So if this evening you find that my talks is so boring and so uninteresting, it's just because I don't want to be so popular. So today I'm going to talk about how to, you know, integrate, you know, the Buddha's teaching into our practice, into our daily life. And actually we are living the Dhamma. We are living the teaching. It's not only that it's just a theory, but actually we are living the truth. We are living the Buddha's teaching. So how can we do that? How do we living from that understanding, from what we know from this Buddha's teaching? So because in our life that, you know, we experience ups and downs, twists and turns, and sometimes deeper turns. And lots of times we often, you know, carry away, you know, when things goes on well. And then when things goes on not so well, and we become so overwhelmed by it and captured by it. And we've been locking and all sorts of negative emotions coming out. And then it causes lots of sufferings for ourselves and also to others. So that's very important that, you know, that we have this, to find the tools, you know, to make use of the Buddha's teaching, how we make use of that to help us in our daily life, you know, when we are, you know, having all these ups and downs, all these eight worldly winds that, you know, everybody experience, even the enlightened one they experience. Sometimes we experience pain, sometimes we experience pleasure, sometimes we experience blame, sometimes we experience praise, sometimes we experience gain, and sometimes we experience loss, and sometimes we experience fame, and sometimes we experience defame. So this is just part of life, sometimes up, sometimes down. And that's why we have to find the balancing factor to balance, you know, in our life. So how to find this balancing factor? That is to develop this right understanding. So in this very aspects of the Buddha's teaching, of this whole path of the practice Buddha's teaching, we begin with right understandings. That is the whole noble eightfold path, that is right understanding. And the end of the path is also right understanding. That is the wisdom of enlightenment. So we have to find ways, you know, to help ourselves, to keep ourselves, to keep this Dharma in our mind, to help us to deal with, to host all these ups and downs, twists and turns and difficulties in life, so that we can deal with it, to have a balance factor, to use this wisdom. So this Buddha's teaching, they have four very distinct factors and purposes. You know, the first one, the first aspect of that is to develop wisdom. The second aspect is to abandon those things that leading away from liberation, leading away from developing this wisdom. And then the third aspect of the Buddha's teaching is to help us to realize that is that the unsatisfactoriness of existence, and to experience oneself, you know, from oneself, the liberations, the complete liberations, complete freedom and complete peace and complete serenity. So the fourth aspect of the Buddha's teaching is to cultivate the path of practice, the way of practice from one own experience. So this Buddha's teaching, you have to realize it yourself and experience it yourself to obtain the complete liberations and complete freedom. So that's why it's very important that we develop this wisdom. So we have to find tools to develop this wisdom. So then to help us in life to create a context of right understanding. So we develop the right understanding to help us in life. So one of the ways that we can use the Buddha's teaching to help us to deal with our difficulties, our twists and turns and ups and downs in life, that is to have this wise reflection. We reflect. We use it as a skillful means to help us to deal with our difficulties. So one of the way of, because the Buddha said, this is wise reflection. This is one way to develop wisdom. This is a wisdom born of reflection. So today, this reflection that I would like to talk about, that is the reflections on impermanent. So why I choose this? Because when you see the impermanent, you understand that it's impermanent because things come into existence and it's bloom a little while and it's passed away. And it's beyond our control. It's just like this body. We've been born, we get old, and you're sick, and we die. And this is just, whether we like it or not, it's happened. So then when we reflect on this impermanent, and we can see the non-self, and when we see that there's nothing that is solid there, so when we can see that non-self, then we can understand that life is just inherently unsatisfactory. So that's important. You only reflect on one of these characteristics that is impermanent. So this reflections on this impermanent, the truth of change, so actually it's not a difficult concept for everybody because we know things that change. We go around and ask everyone, anybody, is it things change? Yes, of course. Sometimes we even like it to change, especially things that we don't like. But we are only on that conceptual or intellectual level. We are not necessarily living from that understanding. So we are not really dropping in. So how can we make use of this contemplation, these reflections, that we're really dropping into our practice? Then we can have this direct experience, direct seeing the truth of change. So as we start to reflect or contemplate this truth of change, this impermanent, so from intellectual level, until we drop down into our practice, and certainly we feel a sense of relief and relax because of the direct seeing, because the more we reflect on that, you know, more and more deeply from intellectual level until that we really integrate into our life, into our daily practice, then we have this direct seeing, clear seeing. Then you have to experience ourselves. Because of the clear seeing that we come to the place of acceptance, that is there where the letting go happen. Then we have a sense of relax and being with the flow of change. But often in life, we are not necessarily, you know, embody or living in this wisdom of change, of this clear seeing. So we often find ourselves leading forwards, you know, to the next things happen, the next meal, the next event's going to happen, and as if that the next thing is eventually going to satisfy us. So we keep on, you know, looking forward, the next thing, eventually, at last, I'll be satisfied. So, for example, people like say, oh, only if this happened, I'd be happy. Only if that happened, I'd be happy. So I remember when I was in Malaysia, I was still a lay person. And there was a monk. He was ordained for 10 years in Sri Lanka, when he was a monk in Sri Lanka. And there was an elderly man used to come to see him and offer dana. So this elderly man told him, he said, I would like to become a monk, but I can't become a monk yet because I have to marry off my daughter. Because of, you know, if I marry off my daughter, I'd be happy, then I can become a monk. So this monk, actually, he's looked at him, he's quite elderly though. Then he said, actually, how old is your daughter? Then he said, my daughter is 60. So, my goodness, you know, 60, he still tried to marry off his daughter. So as it remind me, you know, some times ago, in our monastery, we have a group of, retirees, you know, the pensioners to come to visit our monastery. And they asked some questions, and, she asked, Sister Sari about, you know, what happened that, you know, when the nuns stay in the monastery and they're getting old, and how do you get looked after, things like that. Then Venerable Sari told this lady, he said, oh yeah, we have a older nun. That's just now you speaking, the nun that you spoke to, that Venerable Niroda. She's already 65, you know, that is the older, you know, she's the older nun. And then the response of this lady is, 65 is not old. So this is a perception. So maybe his perception is that his daughter 60 years old, maybe still a spring chicken. So that's like how we always live in the past and in the future. So we never live in the moment. As if this happened, I'd be happy. That happened, I'd be happy. So as if this happened. And then we always go back and forth. Our mind, we never live in the present moment. So, and then according to one of these articles that I have read, health psychology, you know, research, you know, one of the articles, they say those people, when they have to wait, you know, for the procedure, you know, the operations to be done to help them with certain medical issues. So those people, they are less happy than the people that already been told that, you know, that they can't do anything about it. They have terminal illness. So why? Because those people have been told that, you know, that's it, you know, that we can't do anything about it, then those people, they're more happy because they accepted it. And then they deal with it. They find strategy to deal with it. And they accepted it. Then they becomes, you know, more, make the most of it. Like what they got right now. Rather spending times preoccupied their mind in the past, in the future. And what if, you know, what might be, and rather in this fantasy, you know, whether it's going to, you know, recover. But those waiting for the operations, they're less happy because they have lots of worries, because they're worries that, you know, things doesn't work out, doesn't go according to the plan. So then that becomes less happy and a lot of worries, anxieties. That's why, and this is how that, because they always carry this with them, and lots of negativities and lots of worries, and always living in the future, hoping that, you know, it's just for example, if you know that you're going to have eventually get a perfect partner, so you will constantly find fault with the partner that you have right now, so you think that they're not good enough for you. And that's like you keep, you know, find fault with the relationship, right? The present relationships. So because of you think that you're going to have something in future that is eventually going to satisfy you. That's why you're always going to future. And those people are always going to the past. They always think that maybe the previous relationship is much better than the relationship that right now. So then they constantly find fault with the present relationship rather than they really make the most of it to become more appreciative to the person, to what they got right now. So we always think that, you know, we always look out, we never look in. And as I reflect on that, it reminds me of one of them. You know, we have this Gigi Graham, you know, the newsletter. They have these jokes, you know. There was a tree, this goes like that. The three women, you know, they met an accident and they were reborn in the heaven. So these three women said reborn in this heaven, and Saint Peter come to them and talk to this three women. He said that now we have a new policy. So there's all ducks all over the place. and you can't find a place that no ducks. So they said, if you're going to step on the ducks, you'll be tied with the most ugly man in the world. So you have to practice mindfulness to be really, really mindful. Beware not to step on the ducks. So they really practice mindfulness, you know, really try to be really mindful not to step on the ducks. Oh, the first woman, she stepped on the ducks. And then here is comes St. Peter, bring the man. He's really ugly. He's tied with this woman, with this most ugly man in the world. So the second and the third woman, they said, oh, we better be more mindful. I don't want to be tied with this most ugly man in the world. So two of them be really, really mindful. Try not to step on the ducks because they don't want to be tied with the most ugly man in the world. So of course, no matter how mindful they are, you know. And the second woman's, oh, she stepped on the ducks. And here it comes. St. Peter bring the most ugly man in the world. This time, this one even worse, you know. It smell nasty, you know, smelly, you know. It's terrible smell. So she was being tied with this most ugly man in the world. So the third woman left. She said, oh, my goodness, I got to be really, really mindful and really aware not to step on the ducks. So she's really so mindful. Even she go to the toilet, she really takes 2 hours to go to the toilet, you know, and she really makes sure that she finish, you know, then before that she get back, she's really mindful, you know. But unfortunately, no matter how mindful she is, she still stepped on the ducks. And when she stepped on the ducks, she was so upset and so angry with herself that why she stepped on the ducks, you know, and she's so blaming herself and so upset and so angry. And then after that, here is come St. Peter. And he bring a man this time to her. Oh, this man is really tall and good looking and very handsome. And she was like, oh, she couldn't get over it. She said, what on earth that I'm so lucky? What I deserve this handsome, you know, good looking man. Been tied with this good looking man, you know. She really couldn't get over it. And then she asked this man, she asked him, why you're being tied with me? So this man, this handsome man, told him that because I stepped on the ducks. This is how we always thinking that other people is not good enough for us, but we never think that we are not good enough for others. We always look out. We always think that our problem is outside. So this is how our mind is always, you know, not stay in the present. It's always looking out, not even really stay to look at where is the suffering coming from. Right now, this moment, is it the sufferings come from outside or come inside? So we constantly in and out, you know, moving in and out. So we are not living in the present moment. So as we look back in our life, you know, the most wonderful feelings, the most wonderful experience, where is this now? It's gone, dead. We can't hold because it comes and go. Those feelings, our desires, we thinking that the next meal is going to fulfill us, to give us the satisfactionness? No. Because it's come and go very quickly. It's not that, you know, that the Buddha did not deny, you know, the happiness from the senses, but it just lead to unfulfilled because it's very fleeting. It's come and go so quickly. And it's just like drinking salty water. The more you drink it, the more you feel more thirsty, like those desires, you know, that is never, is always lead to unfulfilled. So it's nothing wrong with the desires. It's not a matter of not seeing, not touching, not smelling, but it leads to unfulfilled. Because object of desires is always leads to unfulfilled. Object of mindfulness is become a vehicle of awakening. you know, it remind me of one of the story from the Theravada. The Theravada is that those enlightened monks, they have all those stanzas. So I was really, really struck by the story, the stanza that this enlightened monk, this is a Theravada. So this, before he enlightened, so he's doing this asupa practice. Like he contemplate on this, the fullness of the body, the filthiness of the body, you know. So he was in this cemetery, this China ground. So he was contemplating on the body of female corpse. And this female corpse is already bloated and oozing and really terrible. And that moment when he was contemplating this disgusting corpse that is really oozing and, you know, and bloated. And he had this lust aroused in his mind. And he was really aghast that he had this lust aroused in his mind, in his mind. And actually that moment, he became enlightened because he realized that actually the lust is not in the woman, in the female itself. Actually, it arises between the object and the mind. That is the grasping, that is the clinging that causes the suffering. That's why if we relate the object with mindfulness, then it's become a vehicle of an awakening, so the enlightenment. So it's very important that, you know, how we relate, we change our relationship towards the object. So because a lot of time we're thinking that the object is a problem, we not be able to keep in touch with this moment, what's happening right now, how we feel it. You see, if we are suffer, why we suffer, to investigate, to reflect on it. So why? To investigate. So we always think that this object is a problem. Actually, the object is not a problem. It's how we relate to the object. So, and one of the way to reflect on impermanent, that's also we can reflect on death. Because that all of us is not, we are not going to live forever. We're going to die one day. You know, it's certain. Death is certain. But life is uncertain. When we're going to die, how we're going to die, we don't know. So we don't waste our time preoccupied in the past, in the future. So it's not a matter of being pessimistic, that we become more appreciative what we got right now. Like for example, like all of us here, we really don't know whether it's next time we're going to meet again, because life is uncertain. You know, because we can die any moment. It's very important that we become more, we reflect on this, that we're going to die. If we know that we're going to die tomorrow, a lot of things doesn't matter anymore. It's just from my own experience, I know sometimes when you started to worry about things, then when I started to reflect, contemplate on death, that if I'm going to die tomorrow, is it matter anymore? A lot of things is not matter anymore. Then we become more appreciative. Then we become more live in the moment, in the present moment awareness, not to preoccupy our mind. What if? And we worry about that with all this fear and worry. And also we become more appreciative to our loved one, our family, you know, our relatives, our friends. So if you have things to tell that you appreciate them, please tell them. Because we really don't know whether we have the chance to tell them that how much you love them, how much we appreciate them. We don't know. So we can reflect on that. Because a lot of time we only think that, you know, state only, that only happen to honest people. But only when, you know, if our loved one, someone, you know, I remember like when, before my mother passed away, and someone tell me that, you know, oh, my mother passed away. So when I asked them, oh, how old is your mother? How old is your mother? Oh, my mother is 86. Oh, it's a good age. To me, it's like, oh, you know, it's 86 is old enough to die, you know. So then if it's happened to my mom, even she's 100, I think that she's still young to die. I mean, she's still not old enough to die. It's always, we never hit home. We think that it's because we are still alive when we look around, you know. So we think that we are not going to die. But it's very important that we reflect on that. So it's not a matter of becomes, you know, pessimistic, but we become more appreciative. Then the life is so precious. And we become so inspired, and that we have this Buddha's teaching. So we put in practice. So how can we awaken and nurture this contemplation so that this contemplation becomes strong, so that we are actually, you know, embody this wisdom of impermanent. It's not that just remain on that intellectual level. So the one of the skillful means, one of the tools to do that is to pay attention. You just simply have to pay attention to your body, to your daily activities right now. For example, lots of people, we often, you know, most of us, you know, we always don't pay attention to our bodies, like what happened right now. For example, sometimes while you're having the meal, then you're thinking of washing up. So when you're washing up, you're planning of cooking the next meal. So while you're cooking the next meal, you're thinking of washing up again. So then when you wash up, you think of next day breakfast again. Actually, we don't even be able to enjoy our meal. It's nothing wrong. We got it. We have a nice, delicious meal. We enjoyed it while we got it. So we just enjoy it. Be present this moment. So you don't have to do extra to do that. It's just a very mundane activities that every day we got to do it. You know, we just put into practice. It's all we need to do is does not need to Buddhahoods to observe this. All we need to do is just to simply pay attention what happened right now. So that's right. We are more in touch this body. Because the more you be able to focus, you know, to pay attention to your body right now, it's helped you a lot. Because from our own experience that, you know, because when I pay attention to my body, for example, because the body always gives you the signal. So for example, when I start to feel tense in my body, then I know that I have this, I feel nervous. That is the anxiety is coming. Then I feel that I feel that my chest is contract. I feel that it's closed. That I feel the tightness is there. So I just be with that feelings, because when the emotion comes up, you feel tight comes up. If you ignore it, actually we are suppressing that emotion. But actually, that is the signal. The body's already give you the signal that you are reacting. For example, someone said something that you react. Then when you have the resentment, then you feel close the body, you feel contract. Because you are more in touch with your body. You pay attention to your sensation, to your feelings. Then you know that is happening. Then you be with that feelings. So acknowledge that is come from that you're not reacting. So I know that I'm reacting right now. I have these anxieties. I feel nervous. So when I be with that feelings, because that the because everything arises, it's going to pass away. It's not going to stay. So even though it's unpleasant, it's going to pass. So the more you do that, you become very skillful, because you know that it's going to pass. So when you be able to do that more and more, then you're not suppressing it. Because if you suppress it once, so next time when these feelings, emotions come up, it becomes stronger because you are feeding this emotion. And then if you ignore it again, because you don't really feel the anger, because this is how the body feeling sensation actually is the manifestation of the mind. It's come up, it's from our emotion, but it gives us the signal. So when we be able to pick them up, you know, the sooner the better, rather than maybe being overwhelmed by the emotions or the negativities. So that is all one of the The skillful means that you need to do is to pay attention to the body, to the feelings. It's very important that we do. I mean, you got it for free. You don't have to pay anything for it, you know. When I was in Thailand, I remember many years ago, I was still a lay person. So I really love sweeping. Actually, my lay name is sweeping, you know. When you put it together, it's sweeping. And I love sweeping, you know, when I was in Thailand. So I love to sweep. So I remember one evening when I doing the sweeping, you know, I really sweep. And I was really focused. And my mind is really with this sweeping, you know. And I just feel so, certainly I feel so calm and peaceful. I was really in tears, full of joy. And that's one of the thoughts arousing me that, oh my goodness, it's so nice to sweep. Oh, I don't mind to sweep for the rest of my life. Why? Because I was in the present moment. Right now, this moment. Because when our mind going to the future, going to the past, actually the energy is flowing out, outflowing. Our mind is not centered. So when we keep, you know, the mind centered, pay attention to what we are doing, our daily activities, actually our mind is centered. We are centered. So when our mind is centered, so our energy is not flowing out. So then we gather the energy. So you become energized. So when your mind become energized, you have lots of joy and happiness. So my goodness, you don't have to pay for it. You know, you got it for free. All you need to do is just to pay attention to what's happening right now, the daily activities. And you don't have to take any drugs, you know, alcohol, to feel, you know, high, you know, to have this happiness. All you need to do is to pay attention to what's happening right now. Your bodily sensation, all the activities that you are doing. So I offer this for your Dharma reflections. May this teaching be of benefit to all of you. May it help you to embody this wisdom of impermanence. And also it gives you more and more happiness in your life and also to the complete freedom of suffering. So, any questions and comments? Because first of all, we have to understand the nature of the mind, because that we have the mind that we have this instinct tendency. Whenever things that is unpleasant, we try to run away or suppress, or things that we like, we try to hold on to it. We try to make it stay. So whenever there's unpleasant feelings, then all you need to do that is to stay with that. But actually it's very unpleasant. So that's why it's very important that you be able to stay with that feelings. I know that it's difficult, but you need to have lots of, you know, that actually meditation is the key. You know, because if you be able to, you know, like for example, in daily life, you cultivate the mindfulness in your daily activities, then because then your mindfulness becomes strong. So when you have the mindfulness, when you sit in meditations, your mind calms down easily. So when then it's helped you to cultivate the stillness, the calmness. Actually, we do need the stillness and the calmness to able to hold that, so that we do not react. Because the nature of the mind that we react, whatever, you know, unpleasant feelings, we react, we try to push it away. So to be able to hold that, you need to have the stillness. That's why meditation is the key. It's very important that we have to every day, you know, that we make make it a habit to sit, you know, to sit every day, you know, like a mantra. Tell yourself, you know, sit every day, sit every day. Because then when you become your stillness, your calmness becomes strong, when these unpleasant feelings comes up, you have more space in your mind, you'll be able to hold. So if you don't have the calmness and stillness in the mind, you can't hold. You can be overwhelmed by that emotions very easily. So you need to have the calmness. So this is how that is important, that, you know, in daily life, that how you bring your mindfulness, you know, day-to-day activities, mindfulness, present moment awareness, you know, in our daily activities, then to make the, so that you develop the mindfulness, become stronger. So when you sit in meditations, then you become calm and the breath becomes easily, you know, easily to stay with the breath. Then you deepen your stillness. Then you become, the concentrations become stronger. Then when our concentrations become stronger, when we are in our daily life, you'll be able to hold yourself. You'll be able to, then this is how you help to develop your mindfulness, you know, in our daily life. So it's very important. Both of them have to come hand in hand together. And the cultivation of the mind actually is only the concentration by itself. You can just nap by itself because is not strong enough. If just the mindfulness is not strong enough, and you need to have the effort to put in the effort. So these three, you have to put in the effort together. That is the cultivation of the mind. You have to have the right effort, the energy, the right effort, and the concentrations, and also the mindfulness. So if these three, you be able to intertwine them together, then they become very solid. So for example, like because of you have the mindfulness, then you have, when there's any unwholesome, you know, thoughts come up, that is the time, that is the right effort come in. Then to abandon the unwholesome thoughts. Then if the unwholesome thoughts haven't arise, you try to not to allow the unwholesome thoughts arise. That is the four right efforts, the right efforts. And then you maintain, you substitute, like for example, if you feel anger, so maybe you do loving kindness, you know, that moment, to substitute with loving kindness. Then this is the right effort that you put in. And you try to maintain that with the wholesome thoughts. Then this is the right effort. So these three have to come together. Actually, there's no shortcut. We really have to put into practice, like day to day sitting in meditations and also our daily activities. And actually, there's no like a secret recipe that's enough. Once you do it and then you have done with, then you don't have to do anything with it. I remember some times ago, someone come and asked me one of the questions. He said that, how to deal with anger? So I said, you know, that you can't, because even you don't react now, but it still comes out. The anger is not going to go away right now. It's just like our habitual pattern. We've been reacting endless lifetime. So we cannot use our willpower to get rid of the anger. So it's just like the simile of the wheel. You know, we can't, the wheel spinning, we can't make the wheel stop. But it's just like the wheel of samsara. We react because impulsively we react. When anger come up, we react. When we react, we are kicking the wheel. When we kick the wheel spins. But even though we don't react, we stop kicking the wheel is still spinning. But the momentum becomes slow. So this is how we have to do it again and again and again. They said patience is the highest virtue. You have to do it again and again. Actually, after over time, you can see the difference. So each time you stop reacting, the wheel becomes slower and slower. Eventually, it stops. this is how you work with all these unpleasant feelings. Because sometimes you don't react right now. It's not that you're going to done with it. It's not going to happen again. You still have the anger. But if you be able to hold, you be able to hold it, not to react. So next time, the momentum, the energy, you know, the forces become slower. You can feel it. Then after a while, a lot of things that, you know, like the same situation, so you will not be overwhelmed by the situation again. So it's, you need to put in effort. Actually, we are so fortunate to have this Buddha's teaching. And we really, you know, we already have this shortcut, you know, 3-in-1, you know, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. We are so fortunate. So I remember this man asked me this question. I tried to explain to him this, but he didn't want to listen to that. He said, all I want to know is to tell me a method. Then I have done with, then I can deal with my anger. Then I have no anger anymore. So I was thinking, if I have that secret recipe, I would have used it myself and I got enlightened long ago. And that's, you just have to put in effort, have to do it again and again. So, is it make sense to you? Am I answer your questions? Yes? Yes. Talking about fears, I just share with you when I was a lay person. The first time I lived in a cave, my goodness, the first night, you know, I was, you know, sleeping on the cave. It's just a platform. It's a very simple cave, you know. And I was sleeping there and I really feel someone walking towards me and walking towards me. And I feel that the person is just standing right, you know. Then I turn to the wall of the cave. I'm turning towards there. I used the blanket to cover my face because I was really terrified. I was so scared. My fear is just like, I said, what am I going to do now? Because I feel that this person is just standing there, just looking at me. I was then, that moment, I remember that one of the suttas that I read, that's the Buddha's talk about his, you know, striving when he was a body sufferer, that striving for his enlightenment, that when he was having this fear come up, when he's walked, he keep walking. If he sit, you just remain sitting. If you lie down, you remain lying down. So I remember that. I said, okay, now I'm lying down. So I just use the blanket to cover my body. I'm sleeping just sideways like that. So I didn't move. I just hold my posture like that, you know. So I just stay with that feelings. Then the feelings go really, really, the fear is going to really to the max. Really fearful. I just be with that feeling just to feel how is it like. It's fear and fear. The fears go up to the max. And after that, suddenly the fear just disappear. And the moment when the fear disappear, I have this extreme peace. I was so peaceful. I feel so nice and so peaceful. Then I started to listen to all this sound, you know. You know, you live in the cave, you know. Then I started to listen to this someone walking towards me. Actually, it's just the rustling of the leaves, you know. It's just, then because of the fear, then we come into this perpuncture, you know, proliferations. We're thinking of someone walking towards us. So if we go on and on to the storyline, then we become more fearful. But if you just be with that, actually it's just as simple as that, be with that feelings, then they will not go up. They come to a max, they come down. Because the fear come from that, because fear of the unknown. Because all of us afraid, you know, to die, you know. Because we rather hold on to things that we're familiar with, even though we suffer a lot, we still hold on to this me and mine because we're familiar with this. But unknown, we don't know what happened that we're going to die next moment. You know, what is going to happen? Because it's unknown. Because we fear of the unknown. We always have this instinct. We try to protect this sense of self. It's me and mine. So that's why we suffer a lot because it's familiar. We know this. But something unknown, we have the fear. So actually, each moment is unknown. So when we stay in this moment, so actually we are preparing ourselves to death. Anytime when we die, then we become more at ease and at peace. Don't have the fear. The more you do it, you know, there's no shortcut. You know, some people try to find shortcut, have no shortcut. Then the more you do it, you become very skillful. And you know that, you know, it's not going to stay there forever. It's going to pass. Then the more you do it, you become very skillful and you have the confidence that it's all right. So, and then slowly, then I listen to the, you know, because the cave, they have this water dripping into the bucket, you know. So we put the buckets to collect the water, you know, dripping into the bucket. So some of them some of the bucket is half full, some is a quarter full, some is a three quarter full. So when the water drop, they have different sound. Some they sound like like some people making the sound like So I was really terrified. I remember when I told Bande Sujato, he's really laugh at me, you know. And this is how sometimes we manifest that, you know, because we go into this perpuncture, proliferations, and all this storyline, and we can write a book, you know, about it, you know, about how fearful we are. So this is how very important, stay with the feeling, stay with that, stay. So I find that it's one of a very useful, skillful tools that you help you to stay. Keep telling yourself, stay, 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 or be calm, 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 like a mantra, you know. Just focus on the mantra, like it's a mantra, like stay, stay, stay. Eventually it's passed. So actually, you know, all this practice is just as simple as that, you know. But sometimes how? Because of our mind is so complicated. We make it so complicated, you know. Actually, it's very simple. The practice is just so simple as that. Just stay with the feelings. So, Emmett, answer your questions? Does it make sense to you? Yes? Yes. So yes, of course that if your mind is calm enough to be able to do that. But if the mind is not calm enough to be able to do that, you can't, you know? So you need to have the calmness and the stillness. That's why meditation is the key. So, but there are some other skillful means that we can use. If our mind is not that, you know, to calm enough to be able to really look at it, to investigate, you know, the cause, you know, because your mind is not calm enough, it's not still enough. So there are some skillful means that we can use. For example, you reflect. You know, you reflect when you have all these negativities, you know. So you try to inspire ourselves. Like sometimes you feel hopeless. Our practice getting nowhere, you know. So no progress at all. So one of the skillful means that you can use to reflect on your own goodness, to reflect on your sila. I know, especially in the West, you know, sometimes you tell people to reflect on your sila. The first response they said, what am I do wrong? What have I do wrong? So actually it's not. When you reflect on your sila, then give you a lot of joy and happiness and give you the sense of that self-respect and the confidence. I remember that when I was still a lay person, we used to have a group of us, 10 of us. So we used to gather together. We used to go to the Buddhist society. Sometimes we go to the cave. We used to meet together at night, Saturday night, 7 o'clock. So we do sitting and walking meditation. Then we have this Dharma discussion. So we used to share our experience. So one of our group, you know, this man, he told us that, you know, his experience that when he was doing a retreat, you know, it's a very intensive retreat. So, and he's really come to a point that he just feel like just hopeless. He just couldn't, you know, so much pain because he was trying very hard. Then he just find that, you know, he's just hopeless, that, you know, getting nowhere and become so low. And that moment he just feel like he's going to withdraw, he's going to leave the retreat. And that moment he just reflect that, you know, I've been here 5 days already. I've been keeping the precepts. Then he started to reflect on the precepts. The first one, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the second, the eighth. When he finished reflecting all this, the eight precepts, and then he started to feel lots of joy, happiness in his heart. Then that moment, all his pain and tiredness gone. So sometimes we do need to make use of this, you know, skillful means to reflect, you know, on our sila, maybe to reflect on, for example, the recollections of the Buddha. So, for example, we recollect of the Buddha, we inspire, we aspire to become like the Buddha, to have this peace, to have this, to be like him, so compassionate and so wise. And so why, like for example, we bow to the Buddha. Actually, we are not only bowing to the Buddha. Actually, we are bowing to ourselves. So, because the Buddha said that each one of us have the potential to be enlightened. So, if the Buddha said that if the teaching that I teach that no one can understand and put into practice and get enlightened, and if it's impossible, I will not teach. So what I teach that is impossible, even though it's difficult. So we reflect on that. So yeah, we have the potential. So we inspire ourselves. So we have to make use of all these skillful means to reflect on our own goodness. You know, that's what the Buddhas call these wise reflections. So, and our generosity, and not to worry about that, you know, I reflect on this, will make my ego bigger. It will not. It give you lots of joys and happiness, give you a sense of self-respect, lots of self-confidence yourself. So this is some of the skillful means that you can make use to help you when you are really low. Is it answer your questions? Thank you. So, any more questions? Comments? Yes?
Kind of, it's fear or anger. So thoughts, letting go of fears, letting go of desires, is that more effective, or is it equally effective or more effective than concentration and mindfulness?
Because the letting go happen only when you can really, with the direct seeing, you know, it's not that with the intellectually, like sometimes people try to, when they come up with all this anger and things, and then they try to by reason and try to analyze it. You can't do it by using that. You always have to come from that to be able to remain non-reactive. That you have to come from the practice, you know, from everyday life practice. So that is actually the letting go only happened when you really see it yourself. Like the mind have to really see it itself. It's not by, lots of people think that they have dealt with, but actually it's not really, you know, that because it's, because a lot of people that sometimes they can hold on to, that they think they're letting go, but actually they're attached to letting go. So, but they're not actually letting go. So it's very important that, because if we stay, then we are more in touch with what's happening right now. So, you know, so a lot of people try to analyze it. That's why when I first start to meditate, my meditation teachers tell me, please don't analyze. If you feel hard, if you feel that's the feelings, if you're pulling, you're just aware that it's pulling. Because sometimes we tend to go into all this analyzing instead of really be with the feelings, really being with that non-reactive, objective, observe what is happening right now, but we are going into that analyzing. Then it's so funny, sometimes people, you know, when they go to interview, you know, they will set this air element and earth element. Actually, all you need to say that, you know, I feel hard. If you feel the hardness, that is the earth element, soft and hard. You just be with that, because it's very easily we tend to, then sometimes it sounds like so profound and we think that we solve the problem, but actually we are not, we go into that analyzing and we are not really, you know. That's why it's always important that we just practice that, be with that feelings and not to try to analyze what's going on. Yeah.
That's the first time I came to this place. And so after that, I tried, that night I was letting go of everything in my mind. I thought, wow, this is so easy and so effective. I can't believe I knew this before. Uh-huh. So I was letting go of everything, fears, thoughts, desires, basically everything which makes up me. And I reached a point where I actually felt like I was going to die. I thought I was leaving my body. I thought I was going to, like I was sweating, my heart was palpitating. Yeah. And didn't have this prana or this life energy. I thought I may have ungodly let go of that.
Yeah.
And actually, I thought if I let go any further, I would actually die. So at that point, I got so terrified. And I stopped letting go. So,
because there's time when you come to that point, because after we are ingrained that our countless lifetime, we have been, because if we don't have the sense of self, we are not here. So because of that, when that moment come, you can't let go. So that's why all your papancha come in. You know, that's why you're not be with the feelings. That's why if that moment you just be with that, letting go, you know, that just be with the feelings. If you feel that you're out of the body, you just be with that feelings. Just keep be with that feelings. But because of that moment, you stop off the letting go. Actually, you be with that feelings. Actually, letting be actually is letting go. But that moment, you stop. You try to interfere. Because come from the sense of self. Because the sense of self is always in the way. So when you have the sense of self, you try to control. Then you started to have all these thoughts coming, you know, and all these papancha proliferations coming. So that's why if that moment, If you be able to stay with that, you can go deeper. You understand that? So, you know? No. Isn't it is good if you die when you're meditating? You definitely reborn in, you know, in Brahma realm. It's better than stay as a human being. So, any more questions and comments? Yes. Actually, when you want to push it up, then actually you try to push it up, that is that you're interfering, you're not be with that. Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah, it's just like just now, it's just like the simile of the wheel that I explained just now. Because you're not reacting, so the energy becomes slower and slower and slower. Can it stop? If we can use willpower to stop everything, we all got enlightened long ago, you know. So you can. So you have to keep practicing. So we stop reacting, and then this is how that the energy is just slow wear itself out. Then the will is just, you don't have to do anything about it. The will stop by itself. Of course, it's still coming back, but you notice it yourself that it's not as strong as the first time when this emotion come out. It becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. So you say, am I answer your questions? Okay. I think that's it then.